Stellenborgh McEnroe is out next weekend. Return to Montauk was shown to the Irish press anyway this week. And we've even seen a restored version of the thriller Ronin in the last few weeks. And I think you have at least half a dozen more movies in the pipeline. You seem to be working non-stop.
Well, it isn't as bad as it looks. I mean, I probably work like 4 or 5 months a year actually shooting, and the rest of the time I'm changing diapers and cooking for kids and stuff.
I see. Okay. Now, do you remember the Borg McEnroe phenomenon? It seems that Borg was almost treated like a Beatle or a rock star in his time.
Yeah, he was, but in Sweden, of course, it's affected the Swedish society enormously. Everything stopped when he played. I mean, even in the schools, they rolled in television sets, and education stopped, and factories stopped. Everything stopped when he was playing. I think the gross national product of Sweden dropped drastically during those years. It was a cultural phenomenon, and I'm not a big sports person, but of course, I saw every match as well.
And how did you research the part of Leonard Berglund, who is obviously Borg's manager? Did you speak to people who knew him, or what?
I didn't speak to people who knew him, but I read a lot about him, and I tried to see whatever footage there was of him. And then, first of all, I got a bald cap and a comb over, and that did half of it. But what I worked hard on was trying to create the relationship between Borg and him, and also Mariana, Borg's fiancée, to serve the film. So I was more interested in what was good for the film than to sort of imitate somebody that had lived.
And is that true that Borg sacked him? Is that story true?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he didn't leave.
Sorry, he didn't leave. No, he stuck around. And how is he seen now? How is Berglund seen now? Is he seen as a guy who made a substantial contribution to this athlete's career?
Absolutely. I mean, he's still considered the best, the most successful tennis coach ever. Before Borg, he was the most successful tennis player in Sweden ever. So his legacy is pretty firm. But I don't know how many people that remembers him today. I mean, people forget quickly.
I mentioned that film Ronin, the thriller, and there's a scene in it where you appear at the door of a warehouse carrying two suitcases. And on the DVD commentary, which I listened to last night, before you say a word, the director, John Frankenheimer, who practically gushes about your performance. He says, Stellan Skarsgård is a truly extraordinary actor. And this guy was a big a guy in his time. He is so intelligent, and he brings so much to the playing of this and other parts.
I didn't know. That's the voice from the dead. Yeah. I didn't know that. Thank you very much. Thank you, Frank.
John Frankenheimer,
No, he died too early. He was a fantastic director. And he was also a trained chef. He worked at La Tour d'Argent in Paris, the Michelin star restaurant there. And he took me there once, and we got treated very well.
Now, I love that quote where you said your dream was to become a diplomat. You never actually decided to become an actor. And you're saying you still haven't decided.
No, I haven't. But I'm enjoying it still. And it's I have so much fun doing it. So
Yeah. And there is a Skarsgård, the Dennis dynasty, of course. I think you have 8 children. 4 of them are in the acting profession. And presumably some of them these consulted with you before they decided to go into it.
Well, I don't interfere with their lives. From the age of 16, they're on their own. I tell them to be on time and be nice to people. That's about it. I think it's important. I mean, if you interfere with your kids' lives, if I would have helped them to contacts or agents or open doors for them, if they fail, it's my fault. And if they succeed, it's not because of them, it's because of Daddy. And that would be even horrible, more horrible.
As everybody knows, well, a lot of people know, your son Bill has had a big success as the clown Pennywise in the film version of Stephen King's It. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it yet. I was in Toronto when it opened, so I'm showing this film.
Yeah, he's extraordinary in it.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. Now, just to hit off a couple of other things, Breaking the Waves is often referred to as your breakthrough role. Is that how you see it?
Well, I've done so much. I mean, I don't see my life or career like that. I see it more as a flow, and it's brick on brick, and together they built something. But of course, it gave me a lot of attention, and probably because of that, I got Good Will Hunting, which sort of started me off really in the United States. But I don't know. I see it as the sum of everything. I see my life as the sum of my good and bad choices. Mm. And all my failures are also contributing to the pleasure I feel of in my life today.
And how did Breaking the Waves lead to Good Will Hunting?
Well, they saw it. I was actually shooting with Spielberg in Long Island when they contacted me about that film. And I went up to Boston to meet the actress and the director, and we sat down, and I thought, okay, this is an interesting little independent film, and that would be fun to do after the Spielberg film. So I took it on, and then it turned out to be such a great success.
Yeah. Now, Breaking the Waves is one of a series of films you've made with Lars von Trier, Dancing in the Dark, Dogville, Melancholia, Nymphomaniac Volume 1 and 2. It sounds like he's almost your favorite director, despite what other people say about him.
Well, I don't know how he can get that rumor. And I think that the rumor of him as a difficult director comes from one person, and that is the difficult collaboration he had with Björk during Dancer in the Dark, because everybody else loves him. He's the easiest man to work with, and he's very, very caring, very nice, very funny. You have total freedom on the set. There's nothing you can't say. There's nothing you can't do. And he's not pushing you or anything. And everybody is happy on a very non-hierarchical set. So the bad reputation that comes from, people think that if you make very dark and complicated films, you have to be very dark and complicated. He's a very, very sweet man, and it's lovely to work with him.
Yeah, and what happened with Björk?
Well, you know, all directors are control freaks.
Yeah.
And Björk is an artist who has controlled her career in every detail from day one. And two control freaks trying to control something on the set is not a good idea.
Yeah. And as well, now, I think you've finished. Have you finished the film with Terry Gilliam, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote?
Yeah, we finished early in the summer. That was lovely.
And
I love his films, and it was an honor to just be on the set with him and watching this lovely man work.
And is it about an advertising executive moving back and forth in time between the 21st and 17th centuries? Is that what it's about?
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah. It's very hard to say what it's about,
but
it is definitely. Yeah, that's the sort of the base for it. And I'm playing the head of the advertising agency, and Adam Driver is playing the poor director.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw that story, but after he had finished shooting, and this is true, after he had finished shooting in June, Terry Gilliam, he jokingly posted a note on Facebook saying that he had accidentally deleted the film. Did you know about that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, well, I presume it was meant to fit in with all the other bad things that had happened to it. You know?
That's very funny.
Yeah. Just finally, Stellan, did you have any hesitation in going back to do the Mamma Mia sequel?
No, since I had so much fun last time, and I will take the humiliation of trying to sing and dance, but it's worth it for the joy of hanging out with those people and having fun.
Well, it's a pleasure, absolute pleasure to talk to you, and good luck with anything you do in the future.
Thank you very much, Philip, and give my best to all of Ireland.
Thank you.